Hello, everybody, and welcome to the WDW Main Street Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by our fine sponsors, American Tourist Travel, Scooter Vacations, or David's Vacation Club Rental. You can contact any of our fine sponsors at our website at www.mainstreetmemories.com. And now on with the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the WDW Main Street Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my good buddy, Dan. How you doing, Dan?
Good, Doug. How you doing this week?
And we got another good friend, our buddy from All In WDW, Bob Icon. Hey, Bob, pull up a stool. You're buying.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on today.
You're very welcome. Anybody going to buy me a Bloody Mary in the morning is welcome on my show. What about you, Dan?
No, good. Good to have Bob back on, and it's been a while, and been looking forward to this.
So what we're going to do this week, guys, is me, Dan, and Bob are going to go through a little bit of news together so we can yell at each other. So, and then we're going to go into Bob's All In WDW Top 25 from Food and Wine, and we're going to get some of his honorable mentions too. So let's move forward, Dan. What's your first piece of news? This is podcast number 120, guys. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, there's quite a bit going on down in the world of Disney right now. It looks like the Shark Reef over at Typhoon Lagoon is going to be winding down and closing. That's something that I've never done, but it's been there since the beginning, I believe. And it looks like they're going to be taking that out. Don't know if something's going to replace it, but they're making changes to that facility over at Typhoon Lagoon. You'll be interested in this, Doug, that your Hess gas station is back up and operating over there by the boardwalk. So should you drive down, you'll be able to get gas.
Well, that makes me very, very happy. Guys, we all love that Hess station. That's like home to us. That's where I fill up every time. And one comment on the Shark Reef, I wonder if all this has to do with all the stuff going on with all the stuff at SeaWorld and the PETA and everything else like that. I wonder if Disney's just stopping this before they get any grief about the sharks.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. You know, all I know about it is I know, obviously, the water needs to be kept cold for the sharks, and I know guests that go in it, it's obviously not heated, so it's not a very pleasant experience going in there, getting used to the cold water. But I don't know if it's just being phased out because of lack of popularity, or maybe they're going to be retheming the place. I don't know, but your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah, I didn't know if maybe they got grief or something about it, or you know how everything's going with that. SeaWorld's been under attack big time for everything they're doing.
Right, so, right.
Anything you do with the animals, which I'm an animal lover, I'm not saying it should go away, but I wonder if they just got some backlash from it.
Who knows? Anything?
What's the next piece of news,
okay,
my big buddy?
Yeah, the Legend of Captain Jack Sparrow permanently closing in November. And again, I think this has to do with that whole area being rethemed, if you will, with the backlot tour and stuff. So, I mean, that wasn't very popular, at least it wasn't by what I've heard around the Disney community. I did it a couple times. I didn't think it was that bad an attraction, but it's more of a diversion than an attraction. But that is closing.
Have you ever done that, Bob?
No, I haven't. We walked by it a couple times, but we just never could fit it into our schedule.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't even remember it was there my last trip. That's how into it I was. But I'm not a Johnny Depp fan at all. We all know that story.
Right.
Give me a few more Bloody Marys, and I'll rail on him for a couple hours. That's another show. That's a whole show in itself, if you ask me. But go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, just a tweak, I guess, to the new Move It, Shake It, Dance and Play It street party over at the Magic Kingdom. I guess that debuted this week, and it looks like, from what I see from the pictures here, that's pretty much the same floats and everything. I guess they just changed the show up. This is one I don't particularly care for personally, but I guess any changes to a show or street parade is a good thing. So I'll have to give it a look next time I'm down there.
You a parade fan, Bob?
We don't really spend a lot of time waiting for the parades to go by. I mean, if we're in the right place at the right time and it's going by, we'll take a few minutes to enjoy it. Last time we saw one actually was Christmas at Magic Kingdom last year.
I was going to say, so if the parade goes by the pool bar, you're in.
Well, there's a
right,
good
Bob?
Yeah, there's a good chance that if it goes by the pool bar, we'll be there, yeah.
Yeah, we were cooking dinner yesterday, me and Brenda, and Tapestry of Nations came on.
Nice.
On Magical Mouse Radio. And that was me and Brenda were, like, having a good time because he played the entire thing. And it was great because we were cooking the whole time. And that's the only parade I can honestly say that I would make it time to watch from start to finish. I love that parade.
Yeah, with the puppets and the all that stuff. I mean, that is an awesome loop, too. I enjoy that when it comes on.
The music on that, so inspirational. Hey, hey. Go ahead. You want me to keep going?
No, please. Next news item. opening night of Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party sold out. So as we near, I was going to say Thanksgiving. As we near
okay,
Halloween.
We know you're thinking turkey.
Yeah, I am, actually. As we near Halloween, they're already ramping up for the not-so-scary, the Very Merry Christmas parties now. So, you know, that's
Dennis's last Bloody Mary, Bob.
Yeah, I haven't had any yet, and I'm all over the place here. Let's see here. And construction continues. Downtown Disney, Polynesian Resort, backlot tour shut down. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of stuff going on, construction-wise. New item from this week, earlier in the week, a major multi-year refurbishment of Disney's Beach Club Resort about to begin. So those of you that don't want to stay at the Poly or looking for somewhere else to stay at one of the deluxe resorts, you may have to stay away from Beach Club as well for the next couple of years.
Looks like Animal Kingdom and Wilderness Lodge are going to be packed after the refurbishment. The Wilderness Lodge pool is getting done right now, too, which we had a client that was all upset because they didn't get enough warning that was going down, they said.
Right.
But anyway, I don't know. Beach Club is needed, and I don't remember the last time that's been under construction. And there hasn't been one trip that I haven't been over to the Beach Club.
Yeah, I mean, it says here that it's the first major refurbishment. I mean, they probably did some room refreshes and stuff like that. But I will say, I've stayed at the Beach Club probably three times now, and some of the rooms are getting tired and. You know,
a little dated.
Yeah, exactly. So this is much needed. The interesting thing will be, I think, that, you know, all eyes will be upon what, if anything, they do with the Stormalong Bay pool, because that's, you know, in my view, one of the best pools on property. And no idea whether or not this refurb will impact that pool, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Bob likes Hurricane Hannah's, don't you, Bob?
Oh, yeah. We liked Hurricane Hannah's. We enjoyed that actually last weekend. And I posted just a little bit of an update yesterday on All in WDW. We had a nice, what I'm going to call a sort of a seafood roll as opposed to a lobster roll, a little bit of scallop, shrimp, lobster. It was quite good.
You took the words out of my mouth. You said, and I was looking at you. I was staring at that saying, man, Bob, could you overnight me one of them in some dry ice? It looked really good. And I seen in your post, you said it could have used a little bit of salt or pepper. That was about it. But everything else was good, correct?
Yeah. Generally.
I did my homework.
Yeah. No, thank you. Dishes like that, they typically are a little bit under seasoned. And I'm starting to come to grips with the fact that Disney is errs to the side of under seasoning a little. The old theory of you once you put the seasoning in, you can't take it out, right? So even with food and wine dishes, I kind of noticed that this year.
Well, I think the last couple of years they're trying to get more health conscious. Like we made that, I don't know if you guys seen, I posted an email or a text last night of what we made for dinner. And we made this Singapore shrimp dish, which was awesome. And we used a low-sodium soy sauce. And we were so thankful because it had fish stock and stuff like that in it. And me and Brenda, because we're always on the side of less salt, that we can really taste. So that roll would have probably been perfect for me, Bob.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm used to mother-in-law with high blood pressure. We don't use a lot of sodium around this house.
Yeah, it was definitely fresh, enjoyable. The bun was soft. For the listeners, if they want to see it, just go to allinwdw.com. It was the post that ran yesterday, Saturday.
Well, I can promise you this. I will be parking at the Yacht and Beach Club when I stay at Riverside to go to Epcot, and I will stop by Hurricane Hannah's, and I promise I'll be eating one of them through the gate the next time, International Gateway, the next time I go.
Doug,
I want to try that.
Doug, be careful what you promise, because people may hold you to it.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to that.
We're
going to
get to that.
Yeah. But I have a feeling, Doug, that you keep your promises.
Oh, good. Okay. Moving right along on the news. I saved the best for last, or at least the most controversial news development for last. As everybody knows, it's been out there that the Sorcerer Mickey Hat icon is to be removed at Disney's Hollywood Studios. And let me just outline it like this, saying that although they say it's going to be removed, there is no information out there, nor has there been any direct quote, I guess, from Disney, whether or not the great movie rights facade is going to stay, or the Grauman's Chinese Theater there. What I can add to that is I heard recently that that had changed hands. They sold it. The previous owners of the Grauman's Theater had sold the property, I guess, to somebody else. So the speculation is that maybe now that new company had made a deal with Disney, or will now allow, for a fee, I'm sure, them to, show that on their park maps and bring it back as a park icon. So I don't know if the hat coming down, we'll just get the theater view again, or whether or not, with all this construction, Pixar Plays, Star Wars Land, whatever is going to happen at the studios, whether we'll get a brand new icon, something totally different. But, the bottom line is it's coming down early 2015, so that's not too far away. And what say you, Bob and Doug?
Well, I mean,
Bob.
Well, thanks. From my standpoint, there were a couple comments I made yesterday. First, I seem to be in the minority. Most of the comments I saw on Twitter and Facebook, et cetera, expressed excitement at the Sorcerer's Hat being taken down. And I actually feel a bit on the opposite. And I'm not so, wrapped up in it that the fact that it's going to be taken down is going
to,
exactly. Yeah. Good point. I mean, I'm much more, sad to see Maelstrom close than I am, the Sorcerer Hat come down. But, when it comes to icons, the Sorcerer's Apprentice is iconic Disney, I tweeted. So it makes me sad that they'd be taking the hat down. Now, by function, it essentially was just a glorified shop, right? I mean, you could go in there, buy stuff. It did prevent you from having a clear view of the theater, but the other comment I'd make is that Disney is, as we've spent time talking about the news, and there's even other things that came out this week that you could throw on the pile. Disney's on such a spree, it makes me wonder now whether the theater's going to stay over the long haul. I mean, there's been a lot of chatter, whether just rumor or not, about the movie ride undergoing some major change. There's the, rumor of Star Wars Land, a Cars Land, additional Pixar involvement. I mean, I'm glad to see Disney doing things, and we've talked about this before on the show, glad to see Disney doing things to improve and keep up with the local competition, but they just seem to be, the comment I made yesterday was too much too fast.
Well, I think they're redoing. It reminds me of the Eisner era. All of a sudden, they just decided they're going to go full, what to the wall and do whatever they have to do. It seems like this is the time that they have a stockpile of money, it seems like. They're just spending it right now. In a way, Bob, I'm on the other side. I said the same thing with Dennis. that I think that the theater is going to be coming down too. And I would hate to see the Great Movie Ride to go away, but I do believe it needs a major refurb. Because I don't want to see Aliens no more. I mean, I'm over it. It's like there's so many things in there that could be updated. I like John Wayne, but I even like the gangster scene. I love it, but, you know, things could be changed. I mean, I think that needs to be renewed in there a little bit. Now, the Sorcerer's Hat, I do like it, Bob. I like it a lot. And I said to D before, I wish they'd move it somewhere else so I could have the Chinese theater view that I had the first time I ever went there and still have the Sorcerer Hat. What do you think of that?
That's an option. I mean, I would feel better about that than just taking it down completely. But I would, and I don't disagree with refurbing the movie ride either. I from my standpoint, there's certain elements of it I'd love to see stay. I'm a huge Humphrey Bogart fan. The Casablanca scene is probably one of my favorite. Yeah, one of my favorite things in any attraction in Disney. So. You know, refurb it, if they move the hat, you know, it just feels to me, and that's what kind of what we've talked about a couple of times that you've been kind enough to have me on. It seems like we're forever talking about this is closing, this is being rehabbed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I understand they're trying to improve the park, but it just seems like too much too fast.
But we're going through the era now because we've been going enough, and I'm sorry, Dan, if I cut you off.
No.
We're going through an era now, like the era before us, the families before us with the Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, Flights of One, all these different rides that people, our generation before us lost. There's a lot. We have to lose some things. It's just inevitable for to keep the park fresh.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, Doug. And, I seem to remember, and I could be not remembering this quite right, but I seem to remember when they put the Sorcerer's Hat up there, they kind of sold it on the premise, as they did the wand over at Epcot, that it was only a celebratory placement, that it was just for the Year of a Million? No, not the Year of a Million Dreams.
No, that was put up for the millennium.
Yeah, for the millennium. Exactly. So, you know, I seem to remember that, you know, don't get used to it. It may not be staying. And I think what happened is the economy kind of took a dip there several years afterwards. And they said, well, you know, it looks nice. People like it. Let's just keep it. So I don't know that it was ever meant to be there forever and ever. A couple things I would add. I like your idea, Doug, about possibly moving it somewhere. That courtyard or piece of lawn, if you will, that's out in front of the turnstiles at Hollywood Studios, you know, like if you were coming off the boat and you walked up to the left, they always have like toperies or different things out. You could possibly put it right there so that it would still be iconic, if you would. You'd see it.
And not block the view.
Right.
And then remember I said to you also, it would be nice, like, Bob, you know how you go in the Animal Kingdom, you got that outside gift shop there?
Yes.
Wouldn't it be nice? I said it would be nice maybe if they put the Sorcerer's Hat, like, out there where don't block the view because I like the old-fashioned turnstile, the way you come in there. But put it off to the side where it could be like an outside gift shop on the way into the park and you'd still – and it would be iconic as you're entering.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, could be the best of both worlds, Doug, you know, where, you know, we wouldn't actually lose it. It would just move location, and that might keep everybody happy. Just to loop back to what Bob was saying about the Great Movie Ride as well, and I know, Doug, we talked about this, I think, off the air or whatever, but Jim Hill Media from Jim Hill Media podcast that he does with Len Testa, he's a kind of a Disney insider, and he goes to all the events, and he's quote-unquote, you know, in the know, if you will. He put it out there that, you know, the Great Movie Ride isn't being rehabbed, that it's being totally removed. So not that he's always right, although he does have a good track record, and I'm not saying that that's the be-all, end-all, but he put out there a couple of months ago that, you know, the Great Movie Ride is going away, that they're going to put something else in that building. But we shall see.
See, I think the sad part is that I think it's going to go away, and I don't want to because I put that right there, and I speak gooder English than you guys, but I put it right there as that's the iconic ride in the studios. It's like the old school ride that there's nothing else really in there that you could compare that to. That's like It's a Small World or Pirates at the Magic Kingdom, Spaceship Earth at Epcot, you know what I mean? And Tough to Be a Bug is at the Animal Kingdom. It's like the staple ride, and that's the reason I hate any other ride. Wouldn't break my heart as much as that. Even Tower of Terror, there's just something iconic about the Great Movie Ride. Do you guys, because it's a dark, you know what I'm saying with that ride.
Well, as I said, I agree with sprucing it up, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't remove it. But then think about the geography of what they're taking out. Sounds dangerous.
So that
was taken out. Now the American Idol experience, which is essentially next door to it, is gone. Now the Sorcerer's Hat, which is in front of the theater, which is essentially about next door to American Idol experience, the Sorcerer's Hat goes. It just makes me think like they're clearing space.
Absolutely.
Across that entire corridor, and that makes the theater in jeopardy.
I truly believe that the whole – and this is just me, the guy who did say Internet's coming, but excuse me, but go ahead. No, but this is just me. I think there's plans to change the entire theme of the park, one, like totally. Two, I think they're trying to clear it out. I think that whole area is going to be cleared out so they can have some kind of stage in the middle of the park there for all the events that they want to do. I think there's plans to totally that whole back area, like you're saying, Bob. I think that's all going to be gone. I think all that's going to be demolished from there all the way from the Saucer's Hat all the way to the back lot tour is going to be completely changed.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it. And, if they're going to do it, do it right and do it big. And, we all would agree that the studios is desperately needing a shot in the arm, if you will. So, I mean, if we have to lose something that we all, love, and or at least parts of it we love, I guess so be it in the for progress' sake, we'll have to grin and bear it, I guess.
So... But that's it for the news this week, because I know we continue going forever back and forth, counterpoint. Give us another round, barkeep. We're going to get into some food.
Yes.
Or we'll call her a cast member here. We're sorry. No barkeep. Cast member, can I have another one for the guys? So, Bobby, you want to get into your list?
Yeah. Thanks very much again, guys, for having me on. I really appreciate it. Just to remind your listeners, if you'd like to follow along as we have our conversation today, go to allinwdw.com. The post that's going to be out there at the top of the list, in fact, I'll pin it and keep it there for the next couple days, is basically a recap, really briefly, of my pre-festival top 25, which was the ranking from 1 to 25 of the food and wine entree type dishes that I went to festival with and said, this is my quote-unquote menu. With links to pictures, you can see below what is now my final top 25, the All-In WDW Epcot International Food and Wine Festival top 25, the way I rank the dishes after I ate the dishes on the pre-festival top 25. So as we talk, if you want to see pictures, click on the names of the dishes. What you'll see there is the dish presented with its final rank, and then in parentheses after the marketplace name, what the pre-festival rank was. I don't know where you want me to start, Doug. I can start at the bottom and go up, or how do you want to run it?
Well, what we'll start with, you have the little list of other dishes that you wanted to talk a little bit about. You got the Brazilian cheese bread from Brazil, of course, the Florida grass-fed beef slider, hops and barley, grilled yard bird, farm fresh, chicken marsala from Italy, barbier-style beef tenderloin tips at Africa, the teriyaki chicken skewered bun from Japan, and the Beijing roasted duck steamed bun. Now, what would you like to talk about with them, Bob?
Well, the reason I wanted to spend just a minute talking about these other dishes is the way I run the menu as it is when we go to festival is I aim to eat just the or try the 25 dishes that are on the pre-festival menu. My wife and I attend the festival together. We buy one serving of each of the items and then we split it so that we can control cost and of course control amount of food that we're eating. But
keep the belly a little bit down.
Exactly, because you got to figure with 25 items, we do this over a course of an entire weekend with 3 or 4 days in a row visiting to the festival. The point I wanted to make about the other dishes is sometimes you have something in that top 25 that you wrote from a pre-festival standpoint that just are so unsatisfying. Yeah, they're so unsatisfying that they fall out of your final top 25 and they need to be replaced by something. So some of the other dishes that you see there are things that we tried to see if they could replace three dishes specifically that we were just very disappointed in. And those are the teriyaki chicken steam bun in Japan, the Beijing roasted duck steam bun in China, and the griddled yard bird that was presented by Farm Fresh. Those three dishes were just so unsatisfying that we went looking for something different. And those three replacement dishes, as it were, ended up filling the number 23, 24, and 25 spot in the final top 25.
I don't know if I could have eaten a grilled yard bird.
Well, it essentially was chicken, but it looked like it was a pounded type chicken, but honestly, it was a bit fatty for our taste. And they left the skin on, and it was, instead of being crisp, it was, I want to say almost, soggy. For lack of a better way to describe it. And, you know, we came away from trying that dish. It was presented with some braised greens. Dennis, you've been to, and maybe you as well, Doug, you've been to the Flower and Garden Festival or the Food and Garden Festival, as we like to call it,
right,
and gone to the Smokehouse. And, you know, the Smokehouse presents those same braised greens with their brisket. When you have a griddled yard bird and the best part of the dish was the greens, then you know it wasn't a good dish.
Yeah, right.
No, that's sad.
Yeah, the teriyaki chicken steam bun and the Beijing roasted duck steam bun were just way super sweet for our taste, and it just was not something that that we came away from. In fact, the teriyaki chicken steam bun, I think, was one of the few dishes that we tried in the entire festival that we didn't finish.
Now, Dan, any of these guys, did you try any of them?
No, none of the under other dishes. I did not have any of those particular entrees. It's interesting, though, that I know you're a big fan of the steamed bun just in general, Bob. So it's a little disappointing that what they were putting on them in these particular kiosks, if you will, were disappointing.
If the listeners click the pictures of both of those, the teriyaki chicken steam bun and the Beijing roasted duck steam bun were two different types of steam buns. We were actually surprised by that when we got to Japan. The steam bun in China is very like the Mongolian beef steam bun that marketplace presents. That's very, very good. The other thing about the duck steam bun that we didn't like, and this is just the luck of the draw, I'm sure, but it was a chopped duck. If you look at the picture, and I had a little fragment of bone in the serving that we bought, that was just a complete turnoff for us, outside of it being very sweet. So,
right,
you know, at the end of the day, those three dishes got knocked out, but I did try the Berber style beef in Africa, the chicken marsala, the Florida grass fed beef slider, the Brazilian cheese bread, in order as potential replacements for those three. The eventual replacements ended up filling out the bottom three spots of the final list.
Hmm. So what we're going to do here, Dan, is we're going to break these into – we got the top 25, guys. We're going to break them in. The first 20 we'll do in groups of five, and then we'll count down the top five. Does that sound good to you guys?
Sounds great. Thank you very much. Yeah.
So what we're going to start off with, the bottom five were – and these are the top 25, so they aren't the bottom. They're very good, and you guys can rate them as you thought. Go to Bob's site. At 25, you got the Crabless Crab Cake. That you didn't try, Dennis, at Terra. Spicy hand roll in Japan. The fresh potato pancake with smoked Scottish salmon. Baked lobster Alfredo. I know you got that, Dan, hops and barley.
Right.
And seared rainbow trout. So out of those five, guys, what were your standouts of the five?
Go ahead,
well,
Bob.
All right. Well, from my standpoint, the fresh potato pancake with smoked Scottish salmon, the spicy hand roll, and the crabless crab cake are the three previously unranked dishes that got into the final top 25. Of the five of them, the seared rainbow trout I think would be the best, I would say, and I would go back and order that again. However, I have to come back to the crabless crab cake because that was a dish that, if I remember correctly, that Doug, he asked us one thing. One thing he asked us was to try the crabless crab cake. And I have to tell you, I easily was able to put it into the top 25, much to my surprise. It was really good. In fact, my wife really liked it. The little remoulade they had on top was nicely spiced. And although you knew it wasn't true crab because it was supplied by the Terra marketplace, the vegan marketplace, it was very good. But my main question is, Dennis, what happened?
Well, it's a long story, Bob, but I had a couple of friends that were in town from Atlanta, and they kept drawing me over to the Coronado Springs Resort. So I didn't really have enough touring time to actually get to all the booths that I wanted to. I don't know what happened there, but maybe you can speak to that.
You were drawn by the allure of the Laguna Bar.
Yes,
cheeseburger.
Yes. Yes, which was very good, by the way. In fact, better than good. Was excellent. I guess I'll talk about that burger real quick, seeing how I got nothing to say about the crab cakes. And I know Doug's saying, you had one job, like you said.
Yeah,
Bob.
We could
have one job.
If you'd have eaten it and thought it was good, we could have named this the WDW Main Street Crab Cake.
I know I was going to take some heat, so that's okay. I'm a big boy. I can take it. But in all seriousness, I didn't get to, as usually happens with these things, I didn't get to as many of the, entrees, if you will, that I planned on over the whole course of the weekend. I ended up, as Bob did, I ended up trying some things that weren't even on my list just because of convenience. And I know, Doug, you were kidding me one night when we were talking. I was on my way over to Spice Road Table, and I got a little hungry, so I grabbed, the chicken gyro from Greece. And again, that was not on my list, but it was very good, and I would get it again, actually. But to get back to the Laguna Bar over there at Coronado Springs, I met Bob and Mrs. Allen WDW a couple of times over there, and we had spent some good time together. And I was hungry one day when I got there for lunch, and Bob had recommended the cheeseburger, and it's more than just your typical cheeseburger you get at Walt Disney World, at least in my view it was. It was fresh. You could order it right from the bar, and they bring it out, and it had a bit of Southwest flair to it, I guess, Bob. Is there a sauce or some special condiment on there that makes it taste a little Southwest flavor, if you will?
No, it might be the seasoning on the burger itself, because it is served with cheddar cheese, bacon. Is there bacon on it? Lettuce, tomato.
So.
And it may be that the burger is seasoned such that it takes a little bit of a spice. And I'd like to point out to everybody, it is an excellent burger. That's why I recommended it to Den. It is actually prepared by the same kitchen that serves Las Ventanas and Rick's Lounge in the Coronado Springs. And that's actually a change. A couple of years back, the burger that you would get at Laguna Bar was, I believe, supplied by Pepper Market. And I've had Pepper Market burgers, and they're nowhere near as good as this one. So this was actually an improvement for Laguna Bar.
I mean, that other burger from the Pepper Market was probably more in line with what you'd get typically at a counter service restaurant at Disney World, right?
Yeah, it was partially cooked ahead of time, and then when you ordered it, they would throw it onto the grill just to finish it to taste, and then to heat it up. So it was definitely a lot drier, I would say. This one's very, it's a very good burger. I mean, it's cooked through. It's not like it's rare in the middle, but it retains a lot of the flavor and juices.
I think that's what makes Pecos Bill's burgers, they're better than the normal ones because they go through so many a day. I just think they just keep the grill firing, so it's more fresh than what it is a lot of the food courts, if that makes sense to you guys.
Oh, because sometimes, you know, when they get ahead of themselves, they'll throw them under a heat lamp or something, and obviously they dry out. So I totally agree with that, Doug, that, you know, my theory is, and when we were talking about the breakfasts at the food court over at
Riverside,
you know, I was almost taking the other approach that if you go to a line that has no line in it, you're probably more apt to get cold food than you are if the line is cranking, because as you said, they just keep the grill fired up, and whether they're making pancakes or sliders or whatever, you're getting something that's coming, you know, hot right off the grill. So that probably makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that's why I rave about the fresh pasta, because it's all being made to order compared to going over to the other line where you're – if it's sitting there in a lamp and the guy's waiting to serve you, I go to where they're sweating at the brow and looking to cook. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So
I'll bring us back on track here, Doug. The five that you mentioned, the only one that I did have was the baked lobster Alfredo from Hops and Bali, and that was good. I mean – I don't think I would have had it this far down on my list, but of the thing, you know, that was the only one that I tried out of that grouping. So I give it high marks. I thought it was pretty good.
Now, myself, I would have eaten the crabless crab cake if it was available. I even knocked on the door at Terra because the stands were up because we left the day before it opened. And I said, I'm trying to have a crabless crab cake. Can I please have one for my show? Because I challenged my two buddies and they wouldn't let me. Now, you had the opportunity to have it and you didn't have it.
I know. I let us down. I'm bad.
So anyway, if I would have been there, I would have definitely, we would have tried the bake. I would have had to eat the baked lobster ravioli Alfredo myself, but I would have loved to have tried the Scottish salmon.
It was actually really good. I was surprised. I mean, sometimes you have Scottish salmon, and it's kind of like
too poached.
Yeah, gummy. You know. This was
very poached.
Yeah, this was very, very tender. It wasn't something that I necessarily had to go back and have again, but it was really good. We liked it.
Aren't you guys impressed with my cooking skills over here?
I'm always impressed.
So let's do five more, guys. Okay. Number 20 was the braised short ribs. Number 19 was the ribeye taco at Mexico. Number 18 was the grilled Greek cheese. Where was that from? I think Greece.
It was Greece.
Yes, that was Greece.
I'm kidding. The grilled Greek cheese? Come on. Guys jumping on all serious on my joke.
Yeah.
Cheese ravioli at 17, and the grilled lamb chop from Australia at 16.
Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, thanks. All right, so I'd be remiss if I didn't start with the grilled lamb chop at number 16, because that's number one on Mrs. All in WDW's list each and every year. In fact,
well, that's all that matters then.
Yeah, well, for her at least. I'm just not a lamb chop type of guy. I mean, it's tasty the way they present it with the mint pesto and little potato chip crunchies. She did say that the lamb chops this year, and she had them once or twice, or well, two or three times actually. She said this year they were better than they've been in any previous year. So, I mean, they really, from a quality standpoint, seem to step this dish up. For her, though, it would have been number one, I'm pretty sure. For me, because I'm not as big a fan, it pops in at number 16. The cheese ravioli, in my mind, and Dennis caught this on day one of me being at the festival. In fact, it was one of the first things that we had, was the disappointment of the festival. And that's only because they changed the recipe. It used to be presented with a little bit of a beef bolognese. Now it was just more a, you know, straight sauce, cheese, ravioli, baked. Good, but just so much more of a disappointment than what I've had in previous years, that it fell all the way from a pre-ranking of number two, which is basically where it finished in the final rankings with the old recipe last year, fell all the way down to number 17.
See, when we were there before, and me, myself, I would not have even tried it because it's so, like, I can get it anywhere. So I like to try more obscure things, if you follow me, when I'm there. So I probably wouldn't even try the cheese ravioli because it's just like, okay, I can get a cheese ravioli. You understand? You get what I'm saying, guys.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Bob, I remember, and it was disappointing. I mean, you kind of called out Italy right out of the gate, even before you had it. Basically putting them on notice that they got to step it up and why you're messing with my cheese ravioli recipe. So I know going into it, I think you had low expectations, or at least, you know, you weren't expecting much. And it sounds like that it was what you thought it was going to be, a downgrade from previous years.
Yeah, I would actually say that if you asked me, it was something I was thinking about before we came on today, as to which marketplace was the quote-unquote winner of the festival. And it just occurred to me that if I had to tag one marketplace as the overall loser this year, it would be Italy. Because of the cheese ravioli, the change in the recipe that we just discussed, the chicken marsala, which I have listed under other dishes, was essentially tasteless, and at least to us. And I heard that comment from, you know, one or two other guests. So I feel reasonably confident in, you know, that appraisal. When I take those two dishes together, and then when I think back to this past spring's Food and Garden, they served a manicotti that was just very disappointing. Italy's kind of sliding backwards as far as the food festivals are concerned, in my eyes.
Yeah, that manicotti, I did have that as well this past spring, and you're right, it was pretty bland. I mean, it was just blah, you know, it was nothing great. It was just filler food, if you will. And, you know, I guess I get it at Disney World, and we've all come to, you know this, that they tend to underspice things rather than, you know, for people that don't like spicy food. And like you said, Bob, you can always add in spices, but particularly the manicotti that you mentioned and some of the dishes at the Food and Wine that's going on now, just bland. I mean, you know, it just, there's no pizzazz, I guess, to anything.
Well, it goes back to the point that I made a little bit ago where I said that I'm starting to come to the realization that, or at least the feeling that Disney errs on the side of under seasoning.
Right.
Because a number of these dishes this year, even the dishes, there's one we'll talk about, two of them we'll talk about in a little bit, that in previous years had a really nice pronounced spice to them. And we had them multiple times this festival and realized that that between the first time we had it opening weekend and then the subsequent weekends we came back to visit, it actually had been like dialed back a little bit from a heat standpoint. And I was really surprised by that. I don't know if maybe they had comments from guests that said, wow, this is too spicy. And they took that heart and, you know, sort of like, reduced the spice content a little bit. But I think they seem to be erring a little bit more on the side of under seasoning because not everybody's tastes are, you know, looking for a lot of salt or a lot of heat, et cetera.
Well, I got it. Sorry, Doug, but I got it. We got to come up with an all in WDW / WDW Main Street spice kit that we can sell during Food and Wine. We, you know, little thimble size things of you know, different spices that people can carry in their backpacks and add the appropriate spices to the dishes. How's that sound?
What do you get is one of those pinwheel ones. You ever see those pinwheels that have four spices in it?
Yeah, yeah.
And one. You get one of them guys.
There you go.
Now, with me, and I didn't want to pick on the cheese ravioli like that, but I would think that I could go to Tutu Italia, Via Napoli, Wolfgang Puck's, and get a ravioli, if you follow me. That's why I would have probably stayed away from it.
Probably a much better one, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, have you ever had the mushroom ravioli at Wolfgang Puck's?
No.
I don't think Bob does mushrooms.
Yeah, I'm not a big mushroom fan.
I'm telling you, those mushroom raviolis at Wolfgang Puck's, if your wife likes mushrooms, Bob,
mm-hmm.
they are incredible. And it's a great meal. It's like a $22 meal that's like out of this world. My wife gets it like every time we eat there.
Oh, outstanding.
Yeah, so try that sometime. Now, me, out of these, did you, Dan, out of those five, did you have anything?
I don't believe I had.
You didn't try to brace your
Oh,
ribs?
No, the seared, oh, no, that's in the next group.
That's up next one.
Yeah.
You can't count. I'll do the count,
yeah.
Of course.
No, the thing I did have was the griddled Greek cheese, which was, it was awesome. And I had gotten that at a previous festival, and it comes like in a, you know, like an olive oil sauce, and it has a little pistachios on it. Very, very good. It seems like a, how can I say it? It seems like it would just be that's all right. But it was very, very good. It comes hot, and it almost comes in a liquefied form. And then as it cools, it kind of doesn't get hard, but it kind of stiffens up a bit. Mm-hmm. And like I said, with the pistachio dust and, you know, a couple of pistachios on it, was very, very flavorful. I was very surprised by that, and I would definitely get that again.
It's a very.
Now, were those?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I was going to just add that it's a very consistent sort of sweet and savory type mix.
Mm.
The reason that it hits the list a little bit further down for me, I pre-ranked it at 24, but it actually popped up to 18 just because so many other dishes were a little more disappointing to me. The reason it hits lower in the list is because it's kind of like more of a snack to me.
The simplicity of it.
It's a snack to me. I mean, a lot of the other entree-type items are more like miniature entrees of themselves.
I agree with that, Bob. You're right. It's a tweener, I call it. You know, it's not something you'd order as an entree, nor would you order it as a dessert-type item. It kind of just falls in there in the middle somewhere. So I agree with your appraisal of that.
Now, was the ribeye taco a corn taco or a flour or a wheat or flour taco?
It was a corn taco, and the reason that it fell from 8 pre-ranking down to 19 was, first of all, I'm not a huge fan of corn tortillas. I'd rather have flour tortilla.
Me too. But, that's why I was asking, so we wouldn't have tried it then. Me and the wife would have definitely got the griddled Greek cheese, and we'd have tried the braised short ribs. We would have tried the taco if it didn't have a – there's like an aftertaste to me with the corn taco.
There is. And I, you know, if the ribeye steak in and of itself had been very flavorful, tender, it probably in my mind could have overcome the corn taco and been a little bit higher in my finished ranking, but it wasn't. It was a little on the tough side.
Okay. Let's do the next five, guys. Dan, you're buying this round to get through these five.
Okay.
All right, now we're all even.
Got ya.
Okay. At number 15, the Kamachi dog from South Korea. At number 14, the seared sea scallops from Scotland. Number 13, the crispy pork belly from Brazil. Number 12 is Nucci's peppered bacon hash from Farm Fresh. And number 11 is the slow-braised beef with Puerto Rican ground rice from Puerto Rico.
Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, thanks. Now we're starting to get into the dishes that really could have slotted in pretty much anywhere between, say, number 8 and number 15 for me. So I'll go through these if I can just really quickly. First, the kimchi dog from South Korea. has a phenomenal taste every single time we have it. It's basically half of a hot dog on half of a hot dog bun with a spicy mustard and a slaw, a kimchi slaw on top. It's just the crunch of the slaw, the spice of the mustard is just very good. The seared sea scallop was a very good dish.
Say that
dish.
Three times quick, Bob.
Seared sea scallop. All right, so seared sea scallop was it was very good, very tasty. It's just I have a bias, and I love scallops, but I have a bias against the scallop dishes because they give you one little scallop, and when you're when you are there with a companion and you're going to split a dish, it's just very difficult to do that with a scallop. There's hardly a bite for each of you. This one was served with one of my favorite things, bacon, and a spinach.
There's a theme here. Anything that has bacon on it's made in the top 25.
Yeah. And spinach gratin. So the overall taste was really good.
I love spinach.
Yeah.
Any way you make it, so that sounds really good. Yeah, I would have enjoyed that.
Yeah, that one was. I enjoyed that as well. And actually, Doug John Peters sent me a direct message. He actually was down there, I think, a couple days ago, and he said that he tried the seared sea scallop from Scotland, and he raved about it. He said it was just excellent. So we've got a couple good reviews on that particular dish.
And I'm glad you brought that up. I want to thank John. I meant to do it at the beginning of the show, then we had all these technical difficulties starting it. But I wanted to thank John for sending us both the pamphlets from the Food and Wine, the book and the little pamphlet that he got for the week that he was down. It was very nice of him to send out that paperwork to us. So thanks again, John. You're a great friend of the show.
Yeah, John, you helped me out immensely because he had sent me the passport festival guide as well, and I was able to go through it, and going through Bob's list and us talking on the show, I was able to mock it up and, you know, kind of get a roadmap. So again, I agree with you, Doug, that thanks to John for his support of the show and helping us out with our Food and Wine maps and paraphernalia.
Now, speaking of Dennis, now let's get on to the crispy pork belly there.
Okay, so sticking with the bacon, so to speak, the crispy pork belly comes in at number 13. We were a little disappointed in the crispy pork belly this year. We only tried it once. It was something that we both loved last year, the first year that they supplied it or served it. One of the things I noticed about Brazil was for their tilapia dish and their crispy pork belly dish, they had the servings. This helped in moving the serving line along, and it was a long line typically at Brazil, but they had the servings of fish and pork belly already presented in the little, cardboard little bowl they supply you, and they had them up under heat lights. So that it goes back to your point you were describing earlier about when you have
fresh is best.
Yeah, fresh is best, and you know, having it under the lamps, not such a great idea from a food service.
Especially out in the Florida heat with the humidity. I think that would ruin the texture of it too, just sitting there. That's just my opinion.
We just didn't think it was as good. Mrs. All in WDW said that it served over black beans. And it was a very sparse serving of black beans, and she was a little disappointed in that. So that was one that it was still good, tasted good, but it could have been a lot better. The big surprise to me in this group of five actually was the pepper bacon hash. Because
the bacon was in the hash.
Well, this is also a lesson. The lesson here, though, was how it can be different from one serving to another. Very first serving we had on opening weekend was more bacon than hash. We had it again last weekend because I just wanted to try it again, and it was more hash than bacon. So it was a little more disappointing the second time, but it definitely was much better than being ranked 25 like I did pre-festival, and it jumped up to number 12.
Well, again, that goes to, our recommendation, I guess, of what we have pushed on this show and in previous shows that we talked about food and wine, flower and garden, is don't necessarily come to a conclusion based on one sampling of any entree there, because as you just described, Bob, a dish that, you know, I heard a lot of people talking about this bacon hash. I did not have it, but I heard many, many people say that it was, you know, in their view, one of the best things at the festival. But you just outlined for us the fact that you had it twice and it was, you know, different both times, substantially different. So, you know, had you just had it once, well, I guess if you would have had it once, you would have ranked it higher because it was more bacon. But, you know, somebody may get something and it just may not seem good to them or not, you know, as good as they remembered if they've had it in the past. But it just, it's inevitable with all the, you know, the hundreds of thousands of dishes of food they're pumping out through them kiosks that, you know, you're not going to get consistency with, you know, the servers, the cooks, the chefs. I mean, different people doing things slightly different. So, I mean, you know, if you really do like something or you think you would like something, maybe give it another shot later on in the festival or later in your vacation if you can, because I think you'll find that it might be different the second or third time.
Out of those five, then, did you have any of them?
Just the seared sea scallop. That's all I had out of those, Doug. I'll say this. The kimchi dog in South Korea I've had several times.
It's awesome. I just wish they would just give you a full hot dog.
Yeah, right.
I mean, come on, man. How much is a hot dog?
Yeah, well,
not making enough. You got to cut it in half.
Yeah, I usually get a couple of those anyways. But again,
exactly.
Bob may be able to answer this. Did they offer that at the Flower and Garden, or am I remembering Last Food and Wine, the kimchi?
No, that would be Last Food and Wine.
Okay.
That would be. But you know, I mean, you bring up a good point, Doug. When you ask, you know, you wish they could serve a whole hot dog. I proposed last year at Food and Wine that if they're going to have a sea scallop dish, then charge $2 more and serve two sea scallops. I would say the same thing about kimchi dog. I mean, give the guests a choice. I think it was like $3.75 or something like that.
That would free up the line, yeah. Because I've had them. They're awesome. But everybody seems to go back and get another one.
Go up there and say, all right, it's $3.75 if you want half the dog and $5.
Maybe $5 for, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I proposed that, like I said, about the scallops last year. And, you know, maybe one of these days Disney will listen to the show and hear that.
Yeah, they're just little tweaks that could make it a big difference because, you know, it would be nice to share. I mean, how do you share one of the kamachi dogs when they're that small? So offer the $5 one so you can split it with your wife.
Absolutely.
Right.
She, oh, yeah. In this particular case, she took one bite of it and then I finished it. So.
Right. Or you just buy two. I mean, I'm sure part of this is price integrity. I mean, you start pumping it up and, you know, next thing you know, people are running around saying, $8 for a hot dog? What are they, crazy? So
then you buy a half.
Right. That's what they're going to tell you. Well, buy two and then you got your hot dog. Move along, son.
Well, we're trying to get one a little cheaper than buying two.
There you
for
go.
The,
there you go.
We're trying to be nice. Buy the six-pack or the case. Right. You're going to save a little bit.
Well, I'm figuring that if you were going to offer, you know, a full one, it has to be at some type of a break. Less than two times the current serving. And, you know, even if it was $6, I mean, well, there's not a lot that's inexpensive in Disney, but $6 for the quality of what this tastes, I think I'd probably buy it.
Absolutely. There's a lot of things like that down on the one property that you just forget about it because it's that good. It's just how it is.
Yep.
But, the next five now, guys. We got the beer braised beef potato and leek waffle from Belgium, the tilapia from Brazil, Le Cellier beef filet mignon from Canada, shrimp taco from Mexico, and the grilled beef skewer from Patagonia.
Start us off, Bob.
All right. Well, first of all, one of the things that I said I wanted to do this year was I wanted to taste a leek waffle by itself, and fortunately this time I remembered to do that. I took a little chunk of the waffle and just ate it. It was actually very tasty. I was surprised. I would actually have that again. The beer braised beef was very tender. It was just overall a good dish. The tilapia was a very colorful, pretty presentation. You know, I'd encourage you, if you can, while you're listening, to take a look at the picture. I mean, it's it was one of the reasons that for me the sea scallop was one of the was lowest of some of the best seafood dishes, is just that they're the seafood dishes that we're going to talk about between now and item number one were just that much better serving wise, as far as I was concerned. The big surprise in here, and then we get into one of my real favorites, the grilled beef skewer from Patagonia at number six, is Le Cellier beef filet. This is the second straight year, and you know, it's difficult. They got this open air marketplace. They're mm-hmm. cooking all these pieces of steak. Everybody's taste in steak's different as far as temperatures.
Yeah, concerned. Well, it's also the cuts too.
Exactly.
Now you could, yeah, because they're cutting one filet in the smaller filets, and you know, I make filets here all the time. I'll make a filet, and one half tastes better than the other half sometimes.
And you're right. The cut of meat's part of is a huge part of it. But when you're someone who likes your steak to be medium to medium rare, I'm on the medium side of the coin.
Yeah.
My wife
see,
is
medium,
medium rare.
See, I'm medium to well done rare. You understand
see,
what I'm
see,
saying?
So you would rank this much higher than my wife and I do, because we're both at the medium to the medium rare side of the spectrum.
I'm a blood baby.
Yeah.
I'm a blood baby. I don't like blood, man.
Well, that being the case, that's why this has fallen down the list for us, because they were both overdone for our taste. Number seven, the shrimp taco. Excellent flavor, excellent spice. I've made it at home. It's just a little bit on the more mundane side for us now. Number six, the grilled beef skewer from Patagonia. Another case in inconsistency. The first day, opening weekend that we had it, was utterly phenomenal. Was actually at one point on my list at number three for the final ranking, and had it again. The second weekend we went to visit, the puree was lumpy, the beef was a lot tougher, and I just couldn't justify having it at number three ranking. It just, from time to time, it was just way inconsistent.
Yeah, that grilled beef skewer, I had it twice, Bob, while I was there, and I totally agree with you. I had it once, and it was literally melt off the stick. It was just so the meat was just so tender. And then I had it a second time, and you're right. It was, I'm going to call it gritty. Again, it could have been the cut. I got the end or whatever, but it wasn't near as good as the first time. But I would say the chimichurri sauce that I got on it was consistent both times. It was delicious. And as you know, it's got that garlic flavor and the oil that I think really makes that beef skewer. But I totally agree with the inconsistency, or the cut of meat, I guess, that you get on a particular skewer.
And still at the sixth, or at least from my view, the sixth best item in the festival. I mean, that's a great ranking. It's just there
oh,
were
yeah.
five other things I liked better than that.
Right.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Me and Brenda would have probably tried every one of these. The top 10, we'd have tried every one of them, to be honest with you, because it's all things that I would be interested in, and they all have a little twist. Don't make them mundane, if you understand what I'm saying, that it's different than what you eat every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can't go to Food and Wine without getting the Le Cellier filet. I mean, it's almost impossible not to.
it'll always be on our list. But I, you know, there was a year. In fact, there may have been 2 years straight, 2011 and 12, where it finished at number two on our list because it. Well, maybe that was just 2012 because it was just so good, and because we don't get to Le Cellier all that often, and that's what we would order when we went there. But in the last 2 years, it's just been a bit disappointing.
I think that's a point. And then I also think, because it's been a few years since we've been down, but my other point is I think a lot of the other kiosks have stepped up their game, too.
Absolutely. In fact, I might as well say it now. You know, we just talked about the grilled beef skewer from Patagonia, which is essentially replacing the Argentina booth, which has been at the festival in previous years. You know, if Italy is my biggest quote-unquote loser of the festival, Patagonia is the biggest winner.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the other countries in the kiosks have stepped up their game as far as their cuts of meat and putting a little thought into what their presentation is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I agree with that, Doug. And, Bob, what you were saying, I also got the to speak to the Patagonia marketplace. I got the beef empanada there, and that was awesome as well. I mean, I know the empanadas are, you know, they're not, you know, they're not exotic, I guess. They're comfort food, if you will. But, again, I took travel with Rick's advice and asked for the chimichurri sauce to put on the beef empanada. And that was I thought that was delicious. I don't know if you had one this time, but I thought it was pretty good.
But I didn't. And, you know, again, it comes down to there's just so many things on a list. Something had
right.
to fall off. But
only so many calories you can have a day.
But one of the things I will say is I do try on my first sampling of any of the dishes to just eat it the way it's presented so I can get a good appraisal of, okay, this is how they just presented me a dish. There have been times where I've gone back later and I've asked them to adjust it somehow just to see if I like the dish a bit better, just like Rick suggests with adding the chimichurri to the empanada. I have no doubt that improves the dish, but for me, without it,
it's not authentic.
Yeah, it's not like authentic Epcot quote unquote recipe.
Because basically, and I'm not sorry to cut you off, basically most people wouldn't have the chimichurras to actually ask somebody to change the recipe.
Well, I think in what
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like a seasoned veteran like you, Dan, and Bob, you guys, you understand how it all works, but people just go in there for food and wine for their first time aren't even going to think to be able to ask to put something from another dish onto that dish.
And Disney will always accommodate the guest. I mean, guests shouldn't be hesitant, about asking for something a little different. Perfect example is I posted, we tried the Berber-style beef and tenderloin tips in Africa, as a potential replacement for some of the dishes that fell out of our pre-festival top 25. And the first time they served it to me, it had one piece of beef tip. And I said to the cast member, this has one piece of beef tip and it's all okra. And he took it right back and he fixed that right away.
I remember that post. You posted a picture of it. It was like the sad little piece of beef on your okra there.
I don't know about you guys, but with my wife, it's like she's always worried about it, saying anything, if you understand what I'm saying. Where me, I don't mind. Then she'll say, stop. And I don't know if your wives do that to you. Like, she don't want to make an imposition on anybody. So a lot of people are like that. With me, though, I wouldn't mind saying, throw a little more of this. Can I have a little of that? You know what I mean? So don't be afraid to do that when you're there. Ask for what you want.
I did that with a number of items this festival. And when I presented that post, Dennis, you remember, I put it as food and wine 101. I mean, you know, it's a basic lesson. Don't be afraid to speak up. And in this particular case, I looked at it and I said, I'm going to pay this and I'm going to have one piece of beef. I can't even split that with my wife. So I think by the time I walked away, there were like three or four pieces of beef tip in there,
right.
Which obviously was a big improvement.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the chefs or the, you know, not necessarily the chefs, but these food servers that are out there, you know, slinging the food, if you will. I mean, they might even enjoy a break from the monotony of just preparing the same dish over and over and over the same way. I mean, not that they're excited to, you know, put some extra sauce or add some of this or some of that. But, I mean, they're there to, you know, generally speaking, they're there to make the guests happy. And, you know, like Doug said, that's, you know, they want to go out of their way to make you happy. So I don't look at it as you being a pain in the neck, I guess, is what I'm saying.
And another thing is, if some of these cast members do go out of their way to be nice to you, don't be afraid to stop by customer service or customer relations and put in a good word for one of the cast members that made your trip difference. Because that's what makes Disney different from anywhere else, is the cast members. And I think too many people are ready to complain and not ready to compliment. And, you know, a little compliment goes a long way for your service in the future.
Absolutely.
So let's get on to the top five, guys. Drum roll. Anybody got a drum roll?
Not me.
Okay. Number five. There you go. Number five, the seared mahi-mahi. So what did you like about that, Bob?
Okay, seared mahi-mahi. This is a repeat item. It pre-ranked at number three and fell to number five in the final ranking only for one reason, and that is the serving size that they presented this year was much smaller than in previous years. And I'm not looking for an entire fish here, but the serving size was probably about maybe half the size of a deck
of
cards. Yeah,
you basically got mahi.
Right. It's
you didn't get mahi-mahi.
Still served with their Senga sauce, which I did get the recipe for. I'm going to have to try to work out how to make it normal. They gave me the bulk recipe for it. But I at least know the ingredients. Very tasty sauce. But because of
you could email that to wdwmmsnpodcast@gmail.com.
And you can
you there?
Yeah, I can, but and you can turn it from bulk into normal size.
I will look into it for you if you want me to.
I will take you up on that offer because I wouldn't know the first place to start. But the seared mahi-mahi weighs in at number five because basically the flavor of the Senga sauce is just so good that it makes it one of the top five dishes for me.
I love mahi-mahi, so it would have been right on my list too, Bob.
A perfectly prepared piece of fish, just it was a mahi instead of a mahi-mahi.
There you go. That's what we're going to call it. I don't need any publicity on that. You can use that one, Bob.
All right. Thank you.
Did you have this, Dan?
I did not. I only had one of the entrees out of this five, and when we get to it, I'll speak to it.
Okie dokie. Number four. The roasted Berlasso salmon from Patagonia.
Okay, so this is what makes Patagonia the quote-unquote winner of the festival for me, because roasted Berlasso salmon jumps from a pre-ranking of number 10 up to a final ranking of 4 to join the grilled beef skewer that was number 6, making Patagonia 2 of the top 6. The roasted Berlasso salmon at the end beat out the seared mahi because it was a more complete dish. The salmon, like the mahi-mahi, was perfectly prepared each time we had it. We had it twice.
Flaked perfectly, huh?
Oh, yeah. It was the quinoa salad that came with the salmon, surprisingly to me, was very good. It just was a more complete dish than the mahi-mahi with rice, which was a little bit more on the ordinary side. In fact, my wife says that when Food and Wine serves just plain white rice with a dish, which was done by a number of places, the tilapia at Brazil, the Puerto Rican slow-braised beef. She calls that a cop-out because she just thinks they're taking an easy way out by supplying
Absolutely.
White rice. But the roasted Berlasso salmon, the seared mahi-mahi, I mean, the two best seafood dishes in festival as far as I was concerned.
I would have loved that. Any salmon dish, I could assure you we would have tried because I love any kind of fish. So I'm looking forward to trying that. I wish you'd have got the recipe for that one too.
I think I did take notes on what was in the quinoa salad, and the salmon was just a plain salmon with a chimichurri served with it. So I mean, okay. I'll take a look at the picture, and if I find in my notes the ingredients to the quinoa salad, I'll email this to you.
Okie doke. Number three, the Magnolia beef steam bun. I have a feeling Dennis had that. No, I don't think this either. I know what you had,
yes.
Dan.
Mangoli.
I know what you had.
All right.
You had our host. You had Bob's new nickname.
Well, let's keep moving along here. We'll
okay.
get to that.
The Magnolia beef steam bun from China.
All right, so number 3, 2, and 1. These three dishes that we're going to talk about next have changed places in my final top 25 so many times in the last 2 weeks, it was hard to keep track. But the Mongolian beef steam bun, which was last year's number one dish, weighs in this year at number three. The only reason it does is because...
Well, let me ask you this. Is the winner the one that you ate last?
No.
Okay,
It's actually the one I ate first.
Okay, I didn't know if you had that the last time before you left Food and Wine this last trip.
No, in fact, I can tell you, these top three dishes, I had the Mongolian beef steam bun three times, the winner I had three times as well. So it was kind of an even fight. What I would tell you about the Mongolian beef steam bun is the very first time we had it, it's going to be an example of I had it like it was served to me, and it was much less spicy than it was in past years. It's a beef with a little bit of hard Chinese noodles, and it has a chili mayo over top, which in my mind was a very more on the bland side than it was in the past. So I was disappointed with Mongolian beef steam bun the first time. It was actually closer to like, I don't know, 8, 9, or 10 in my ranking until we had it the second and third time. Second and third time, I did something a little different. The Chinese marketplace gives you a bottle of sriracha that you can put on to taste. So I put the sriracha on top of the chili mayo.
Changed the whole game. Huh?
It changed the whole game. And but the second and third time we had it, much, much, much more like what we remembered last year. The Mongolian beef, very tender, tasty. It probably
brought the flavor out.
It did. And why they changed it probably is because they had complaints that it was a little bit on the spicy side. But I think it's really needed to make this. Well, the dish jumped from like number 8, 9, 10 on my initial list after opening weekend up to number three by the time all is said and done.
I've learned my years of cooking for the most part, and I understand probably why they did it, to appease more people, because most people either like heat or they don't like heat. They say they don't mind it a little hot, but usually when it's a little hot, it's too hot for them. You know what I'm saying? There's usually not pleasing a lot of people with heat. It's either you like it or you don't.
It's
I don't know if you guys agree with that, but it's usually the case.
No, I it's what I said earlier, right? I mean, once you put it in, you can't take it out. So you can always add a little bit more if you want. So, I mean, it makes sense that Disney does that because not everybody's palate's going to be able to, take an excessive amount of heat or any other spice for that matter. So we understood why they did it. It's just once we learned what we needed to do in order to eat it, have it taste the way we wanted it to.
Ran right up the list.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's a great tip, Bob, that they have that, what did you say? Chirasso sauce? What did you call it?
It's the sriracha sauce.
Sriracha, yeah. Now, do they have that right at the kiosk?
It's right on the counter in a big bottle. I mean, you have to take a second and squirt a little bit on, on the dish before you walk away.
Yeah,
it's a classy condiment.
Yeah, no, I mean, but again, having been in those lines, we've all been in them. You kind of, they're pushing you through, and you may not take the time to really look around to see if they're offering other spices or sauces like that to add to your dishes. So, I mean, that's a great tip for the festival to, look around and see what else they might have to enhance your dish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Number two, Kahlua pork slider.
Yep, the Kahlua pork slider. That's been my quote-unquote champion dish twice in the past, and it got darn close again this year. Last year, the Kahlua pork slider had fallen down to number four because the pork, each time we tried it, and we went back a couple of times to just in case they were having a bad day the first time or two, the pork tasted way overdone to us. And it was not very spicy.
It got a little sticky, like.
Yeah,
like
it was kind of dry and almost had like a little bit of a burnt taste to it. This year we had it twice, or I had it twice. The pork was tender, juicy, well cooked. Didn't have that burnt taste both times. First time we had it, they did put the spicy mayo that they serve it with on it. They drizzle it on with a little bit of like a pineapple chutney. The second time I had it, I asked them to double up on the spicy mayo. And it just, both times, very good, very consistent dish. But the second time was just a step above because of the additional spicy mayo.
It's probably the marinade they make it in, how long they cook it. It's probably, there's a lot of little things that can make the dish go wrong, you know, right or wrong. You know what I mean? And they probably did it perfectly this year for you again.
It just was like it was in 2011 and 2012. I just couldn't get it to the number one dish.
Yeah, like you were saying before with the recipe you got, and you don't know how to break it down into, you know, the serving size you want it to be. And I think that's the same thing with this. They're prepping, like, thousands of dishes to get the consistency perfect. You know, it isn't as easy as one piece of pork. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably where the consistency comes in with, you know, and I've never had that. I'm looking forward to trying it one year.
You're going to enjoy it.
Well, I know I will.
Well, again, and there seems to be a theme here. And, Bob, again, you had them double up on the you know, the mayo or whatever it was that you put on there. I mean, again, by just adding something to the dish, you were able to make it so that it was, you know, over the top good for you, or improved it, right, Doug? So, I mean, you know, again, look around, see what they have. Don't be afraid to ask for additional sauce or a sauce that they don't offer with a particular entree, because, you know, it'll make your food and wine experience so much better.
All you get
a lot of times. I'm sorry, Bob, go ahead.
I was just going to say, all you got to do is ask. And you know, I remember the young lady when she served me the second pork slider and I asked for the extra mayo. She said, oh, you like spicy, huh? And I said, yeah, I do. So all you got to do is just ask them. That really, I guess you're right, Dennis, is the lesson to come out of this.
Yeah, what I would recommend is, what I was going to say is, ask them for a little bit more of the sauce on the side. Like, don't add it immediately. Just have them put a dab of it on the plate with the serving so you can adjust it as you're going. This way you don't have to go back.
It's a great idea.
Take the first bite. There's not enough. You can always dip it in. You know what I mean? Add to it. But this way you can try it the way it is. And then if you need to adjust it, you have the extra sauce with you. That's what I would do.
Another good tip.
Yeah. So that's what we're here
for. We're full of tips.
Yes. And the final number one for this year's All-In WDW Food and Wine is the lamb meatball from New Zealand.
It is, and I got to tell you, it was the first thing we had when we got there on opening weekend, and it was phenomenal. It's served with a tomato chutney, and I had it three times over the course of the 3 weekends that we went, once each weekend. And the first time I had it, the spiciness of the tomato chutney was just perfect for my palate. And I think they actually dialed it back a little over subsequent weekends, because the second and third it was a little less spicy. But the lamb meatball was prepared perfectly all three times. The chutney was very tasty. What it really worked down to for me was two things. The first one was, we've made our knockoff of Kahlua pork slider ourselves, and which in my mind puts it a little bit more into an ordinary category. I can't imagine that we're going to try to make a lamb meatball. If I were giving somebody a recommendation, and like you said earlier today, Doug, that you go to the festival and want to try new and different, unique things, I would say try the lamb meatball. If you're not a fan of lamb, then I would say, then by all means, try the pork slider or the Mongolian beef steam bun. All three of these dishes, like I said, interchanged places over the last couple weeks for me, but what it really worked down to was the lamb meatball being more unique, and the fact that you guys don't like it, I know it would make for a great conversation.
Yeah, I know you listen to our shows, and you heard Doug and I that obviously can't tell the difference between lamb and venison, for starters. But
we were joking.
Once you get past that, I remember you know, before I left you guys on, I think, the last day that we spent over in Coronado Springs, you looked at me and said, Dennis, you got to try the lamb meatball. And you really impressed upon me the fact that, you know, you really ought to do that. You're going to enjoy it. And I took you up on that. And upon, you know, heading over to Epcot on my last day, I said, I got to do this. And I remember, I think, an earlier post, or maybe we talked about it, but you were disappointed in the amount of chutney that they had given you, I think, the first time you had the lamb meatball. I can say that on the one time that I had it, the I'm going to call it a bread bowl it comes in, I guess you'd call it. The chutney, was the meatball sits in the middle, and the chutney was filled up all the way through the, you know, up and over the top and over the side. So the amount of chutney was plentiful for me. But I think what happened to me is psychologically, and this is on me. I mean, I ate the whole thing. It was good. But I just can't get over the fact that it's lamb, and I'm not a big, you know, game eater, you know, lamb, venison, you know, exotic meat, you know, buffalo or whatever. I mean, I've never really had a palate for that stuff. And just psychologically, knowing it was a lamb meatball, it just, it, like I said, it didn't not taste good, but it wasn't like if they called it a beef meatball, I probably would have ranked it in my top three. And that's silly because you should be going on taste only. I realize that, but I just couldn't get over the lamb. So unfortunately, this didn't make it into my top even 25. I just didn't care for it. But again, I don't know how else to say it. It wasn't that it, you know, it wasn't good or it wasn't presented good or anything like that. It just, it's me and it's lamb and I just can't get over it. So, unfortunately, I rank it very low on my top 25 or 30 list, whatever you want to call it.
And everybody's tastes are different, right? I mean, we talked about that last time that I was on and we talked about Food and Wine. Is one of the great things about the festival is there's usually something for everybody. I mean, use lamb as an example for just my wife and I. She liked the lamb meatball. She loves the lamb chop. I don't mind the lamb chop, but I love the lamb meatball. I mean, it's just a different way of presenting the same protein, and right. And it appeals to different people. So I tongue in cheek say that part of the reason this is number one is because I knew it would elicit a great conversation with you folks. But the bottom line is when I took a look at what I had in the top five, I know I could make my salmon. The Mongolian beef steam bun, that's a unique thing, but it wasn't consistently good as the lamb meatball.
Right.
And so it basically lamb meatball at the end of the day, I said, you know, this really has to be number one for me because if I went back this weekend and said, okay, I could have one thing of all of these top 25, I'd probably say, all right, well, if I can only have one thing, I'm going to have the lamb meatball.
Right.
I'd
have probably stayed away from it. You know me with lamb, but I did break down at Spice Road Tables, and we're going to do a review for you, Bob. Mm. Is we broke down. I did have the lamb. There's a lamb, two of the three. It was called a trio, a combination platter. And two of the three entrees on there were lamb sausage, lamb slider, and then they had this chicken wrap, which was out of this world. Now, I enjoyed both of them, but it's the same thing as Dennis is talking about. Just because I knew it was lamb, it kind of there's something about eating that just is it don't go with me. It's weird. It's hard to explain. It's all in my head, but I can't get it out of my head.
And I understand that. I mean, for instance, venison. I got the same issue with venison. Last year's Food and Wine, I tried New Zealand's venison sausage. I didn't have it this year, but I took like two bites of it, and I finally said to Mrs. All in WDW, "You could have the rest of it." And she was fine with it. She likes venison. So it's the same type of thing. I mean, if we go out and there's a bison burger on a menu and a regular burger on a menu, I've had bison, but I would probably pick the regular burger.
Yeah, there's more of a grainy taste to the bison burger. Yeah. I'm not saying it's bad, but it has more of a gamey taste to it. It's just the same thing that you're – venison is great if it's cooked right. You got to have somebody to, and it's hard, and it's sad. Like, anybody can cook venison, but not everybody can cook venison. And there's a way to get the gamey taste out of it. Because you ever had venison with somebody that thinks they know how to cook it, but don't?
Oh, I have, Doug, and you know, I can tell a story here that I'm sure you guys have similar stories or whatever, but in my younger days, I used to have a couple of buddies that used to hunt, and, you know, they'd take a deer every so often.
My brother.
Yeah, but, I mean, they would always make this venison chili, and it was one of those things, you know, most of the wives didn't particularly care for, you know, venison, or so they said, but what happened over the years is, you know, one of the wives that did like venison, she would slip in, she'd either cut it with beef, you know, half beef, yeah, half venison or whatever. But if the person eating the chili didn't know anything
about
venison and just said, oh, we're having chili tonight, they gobble it down like they would if it was an all beef chili. So I really do feel that it's somewhat psychological. You know, I'm not saying that the taste isn't different, because it is, obviously, but
different texture.
Exactly. And, you know, again, if somebody didn't tell you, like I said, I wish I could have done this, and obviously I couldn't, because I knew going in, you know, if you know, they presented that as a beef meatball or just a plain meatball, you know, well, I wonder if I would have even noticed or you know, had a different view upon it.
What you have to do next time, Bob, is you have to go get it for him and hand it to him and tell him this is a beef meatball.
Yeah.
Well, and he'll go, oh, my God, this is the best. Oh, the chutney's incredible.
I think it'll have to be a little more involved than that, Doug, because Dennis is pretty linked in to everything that goes on Walt Disney World-wise.
No,
So, Dennis, you're going to have to not look at any Disney website going into the next festival. And just look at allinwdw.com, and I promise I will present the meatball as a beef meatball.
Okay.
Every single post going up to the festival, and when you get there, don't look at the menu. Just walk up and say, I want a meatball.
Right.
See, and then psychologically you'll think it's a beef meatball.
Yeah, because I love to try new stuff and all. I mean, have you guys ever made because we did that Singapore noodles and shrimp last night with the shiitake mushrooms, and it had 4 ounces of cellophane rice noodles. Have you ever made cellophane rice noodles?
I have not.
And it's awesome, and they cook differently. What you do is you put them in the bowl, and you actually pour the hot water over them instead of boil them in the hot water.
Oh, okay. So they're like the ramen noodles there or whatever
they're
called? Yeah,
they're kind of like that. But it's really – you look at them and you're feeling them, and it's like, this is not going to be good. You know, because they look like cellophane. But then when you've actually cooked them into all this, it was absolutely – they're incredible. And if it wasn't for us, my wife watching the show, the chew that she watches, blah, 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 we'd have probably never tried this. Like, I didn't even know these noodles existed in the grocery store. And when I went there, I found a whole new aisle of different noodles that I can't wait to try. And this is the thing that I love about food and wine, because it opens your mind to things that you never thought you could do.
Yeah.
And try.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the same thing in the supermarkets up here. I mean, where they never had it at all, it was just a small section. They have a couple aisles now that are all ethnic food, and
absolutely,
you can get noodles and different things, I mean, from all kinds of countries and Korea, and, you know, you can really expand your recipes and the ability to make these different things. So I hear exactly what you're saying, Doug.
Because me and Brenda had a fantastic time yesterday. We had a couple glasses of wine. I had a couple Canadian Molsons, and we made this fantastic meal. And it's so nice to work on it for a couple hours and then sit down and eat it. I think it's more gratifying than even going out. We love to go out to dinner. We're going out next week to a new Japanese restaurant, but I do enjoy eating around the world like you guys. Like, that's what makes food and wine so awesome, trying things that you never would think to try.
Absolutely.
So, is that all you have, Bob? What was your favorite of the entire food and wine, Dan?
Oh, well, again, if I just limit it to what I had, you know, this food and wine, I'd probably say, you know, I noticed it didn't make Bob's top 25 or even his other dishes. But I did enjoy the lobster seafood fisherman's pie at Ireland. I had that on the first day, and you know, I that's an old standby for me. I really enjoyed that. Probably second, you know, I got to go back to what Bob said about Patagonia and the beef empanada and the skewer there. Excuse me. Again, excellent. I really enjoyed them, and I think partly because of that chimichurri sauce. That is awesome stuff. I mean, I got to make some of that for myself, because that can go on a lot of different dishes, and I just like the texture and the flavor of it. And, you know, again, just to wrap up my food and wine experience, I'm somewhat jealous in that our good friend Bob here gets to go down multiple times and try things multiple times in a given festival. You know, if I'm lucky, I get down there once, and I'm not always able to eat as much as I want or enjoy, partake, I guess, in the festival as much as I want to.
Well, you have to stop him from feeding you cheeseburgers at other
locations. Yeah, that
let you eat his food and wine like you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, actually, one day, and, you know, just to show you how you know, popular the festival is, you know, Bob and I and Mrs. Allen WDW got together around noontime or whatever, but they had already been to Epcot and back by that time. And, you know, Bob said, "Dennis, it's a zoo." We were texting. That's what it was. I was going to head over to the festival, and he said, "We just bailed out of there because it's a zoo over there." I think it was a Saturday or Sunday. I don't remember. But
it was one of the weekend days. I remember because we got there, and, you know, it was odd that we had left so fast, but they had opened the marketplaces a little before 10:30, which is a lot earlier than I've ever seen them open before. So we were able to taste a couple of things, and by the time it was pushing noon, I mean, I remember it was Saturday, actually. It was the day before Maelstrom closed that weekend. And I remember saying to my wife, I said, "Where are all the locals at?" Because it was quiet until about noon, and then all of a sudden we went in and had our last ride on Maelstrom, came out, and there were people everywhere. And that's when you and I were texting, and I finally said, "All right, that's it. We've had enough." And then we went over to Laguna Bar, which I believe you joined us at.
We did.
And he got his burger, didn't eat the crabless crab cakes. So now I'm blaming you both. Oh, man.
Oh, good. Now I get someone to share my pain.
Wouldn't it be cool, though, if one of these years they did, like, because you were talking about early there, wouldn't it be nice if they did a food and wine breakfast at, like, 8 o'clock at World Showcase?
Yeah, I mean,
have breakfasts from around the world, different styles of breakfast?
As much money as that festival brings in, that wouldn't surprise me at all. If they can, well, we know,
like, Belgian waffles, you know, right, different things from around the world, wouldn't that be nice?
Oh,
as long as they have pepper bacon hash, you can count me.
Well, there's my new thing. But Dennis and me, I'm bangers, he's mash. We're going to start calling you Bacon Bob.
Bacon Bob.
That's your nice new nickname. You're Bacon Bob from WDW Main Street.
He means that with the utmost affection, too, Bob.
I'm a big fan of the bacon hash and the crispy pork belly. I am a fan of the lamb meatball. I guess you could probably name me any of these things.
Yeah, you're Bacon Bob. That's going to stick now. Kinda, bangers, mash, and Bacon Bob.
I kind of like steamed bun Bob better.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, jeez. So, well, it's been a great show, guys. Please go over to All In WDW, check out Bob's Top 25, and look at the pictures while you're listening to us, our goofy show here. I think it'll be a lot of fun. And check out his site. He does a wonderful job, and he goes multiple times of food and wine. Like Dennis said, it has us jealous, but it's also great for our podcast, so we get all the insight on food and wine. You got anything else you want to plug, Bob?
No. Thank you very much again for having me on. Really do appreciate it. It's an honor and a joy to be able to sit down and talk with you guys. Please come to allinwdw.com. Doug kindly said, I'll have the top 25 posted out there for you. We just did a Hurricane Hannah's update. Got a couple other small things in the hopper, cupping in the next several weeks. I got to start catching up on some of the other dining that we've done. Contrary to public belief, we don't always go to just Laguna Bar. although I got to be honest with you, people, if you do want to have a nice, relaxing stop from an adult beverage. Well, it doesn't have to be adult. But anyway, Laguna Bar at Disney Coronado Spring. Can't say better things about it.
And you want to give your the best bartender, in your opinion, on property a plug?
Yeah. All the bartenders at Laguna Bar are top-notch.
There you go. And, Dan, anything you want to plug, buddy?
No, just enjoyed talking some food and wine, and I would second what Bob said about the Laguna Bar there. I mean, I had stayed at Coronado several times. I had been to that bar probably a couple of times before this last weekend, and it is nice in that it sits out on the water and it's undercover, so except for a couple of the seats, you can get in out of the sun when it's hot. And if it does rain, you're able to still stay there, which I think we did get a shower once while we were there. But it is a very nice place. And I know Coronado, I always try to stick up for it because it kind of gets it doesn't get as much fanfare as the other moderates. And I think it's sold short.
It's no Riverside, but it's beautiful.
It is. In its own right, it is beautiful, and I would recommend anybody stay there and visit the Laguna Bar, as Bob said.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd like to say is me and Dennis are thinking about doing something hopefully special coming up for Bob, maybe do a couple food reviews for you on our own part, if Bob would enjoy that for his show.
Absolutely.
For your website, I mean, excuse me.
No, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
So. Well, that's going to be it, guys. Please don't forget to contact our, get on our website, email us at wdwmmsmpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at wdwmainstreet. Follow Dennis at Oak Manor, me at Grumpy6767, or check out our buddy Bob on Twitter at AllInWDW. So that's going to be it, guys. I'm running from the bar stool. Used to fight over the tab,
uh-oh,
and we will talk to you later. See you later, guys.
Take care,
later,
guys.
Well, that's going to be it, guys. Me and Dan's going to hop off our stools. It was another fun day of talking Disney with you. And don't forget our sponsors, American Tourist Travel, Scooter Vacations, and David's Vacation Club Rentals. If you need to find any of our fine sponsors, hop on our website at wdwmainstreetmemories.com. And again, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you real soon.